live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
So this will be the first summer for many of our kids and grandkids without social media. Will it actually make a difference? Will kids all of a sudden play outside, jump on their bikes and bust out their books? Let them be kids. That's the idea and the hope with the social media ban. But are we just kidding ourselves if we think that they're going to all of a sudden have summer holidays like we used to? Do we look back on those days through rose-coloured glasses? Do you have a plan in place for the first no social media holidays? But if you are planning on trying to read more these holidays, how pristine do you keep your books? There's a trend on TikTok of annotating your books. So this is marking, you know, using sticky notes, using post-it notes to mark the pages that you love, to mark pages of significance. And sometimes there can be hundreds of these little tabs. So do you underline? Do you make notes? Do you fold edges? Or is that a big no-no? Or maybe you're a part of this trend of the book tabbing community. It's a real thing.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
School holidays are on again and there are the usual problems. It's a bad time for adult theatre goers, a trying time for motorists, hell for most parents, but it's a beaut time for the kids. Or is it? What do they do these days with their 2 weeks holidays? What are you doing in your holidays?
Play with my schoolmates.
You have things to do, may go away on holidays and all that.
No, it's alright if you know what you're doing first.
So is that how our holidays are going to look and sound now that this will be the first holiday for a lot of our kids and grandkids without social media? So that was just a little bit that we heard back from the 1960s. It was a report taken from This Day Tonight. It aired in about 1967. That was Peter Luck, who you just heard there. So given that this will be the first school holidays, summer holidays, for a lot of our kids and grandkids without social media, will it look any different? Are you thinking that they're going to be kids again? And are we thinking that they'll have these holidays like we used to have? And if you think back about what your school holidays were like, were they better? Like, what were they like? What were your summer holidays like? Dr. Elise Waghorn is a lecturer in early childhood education at RMIT. Elise, the whole thing of kids need to be bored. That's when they have the most fun. That's when they get creative. If I think back to my summer holidays, it was literally weeks on end with my cousins down at Phillip Island. I waved off my mum and dad at the beginning of December and I saw them again during January and had the best time. Were they as good as what we remember?
I think they were, but it's also different to today because we weren't growing up in a society where we did have screens in our face. So I look fondly back at my own early childhood and think, wow, what a great time, and wish my kids could have experienced that as well. But the fact is that it's different. And so we can bring the fun back and we can, reflect on that, which is great. But we've also got to recognise that we're living in a different world now.
And how do we do that? I mean, a lot of it will come down to, as parents, for us getting off social media and getting off our screens, and for our children or our grandchildren to embrace that so-called nostalgia that we all remember, that we all love, that we look back on so fondly. We need to change our habits too.
100%. Look, and I've tried to make the executive decision with my own kids as well as putting my phone down, because we can't expect them to do something that we're not willing to do ourselves. So it's just like simple going out in the sun, and we can't tell children to put a hat on if we're not going to put one on ourselves, because then that brings into consideration of, well, why do you have to do it, not me, type thing. So I think what we need to do as parents, as hard as it is, because obviously we use our phone for work and so much more as well, but I think we need to start role modelling how to detox as well, just so that we can set that standard and our expectations. But who says that adults can't have fun and be kids as well? So enjoy that with your children. Become kid again. Laugh, have fun, get dirty, make mud pies, all those fun things that we used to do when we were little.
Do you need to go through the stages of boredom You know, like you need to get to that moment of like, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm so bored, whether that be a child or an adult. And from there come the ideas, come the creativity.
Look, 100%. The problem with screens is it gives them an instant fix. So when a child is bored and they log onto a game or a social media reel, it's constantly giving that feedback to the brain that now I'm not bored. I've got something to do or I've got something to watch, even if it's mindless. The problem with playing is that you've actually got to create your play or you've got to come up with ideas, which is challenging for children when they're so used to that instant fix. So it's allowing to sit with that boredom. But also the research supports that when children come up with their own ideas, they're more likely to be engaged in it a lot longer. So instead of us as parents telling them what to do, oh, cook something, go outside, go play ball, go to the park, they're our ideas. We need to encourage children to come up with their own ideas because then the chances are they're going to stick at it longer.
And so much else has changed beyond social media. You know, the days of, you know, you hear stories of, oh, mum or dad would say, come home when you smell the sausages cooking outside. And you'd just go off and you would never come back for the entire day. They barely knew what you were up to. We parent very differently now. So those freedoms aren't just about not having social media. Those freedoms have changed as a result of how we parent, I think.
I think it is also because as parents, we've seen the social media and we're so much aware of the risks because they're in our face. Back in the day, our parents didn't know what was happening in the community or if there was a burglary or car hijacks and things like that. We didn't know about it. So we trusted in our community. The trust in our community is probably depleted a little bit because we're so aware of it now. We've all got those community pages where we live and we see what's going on. So if we then put that down and don't listen or read it as much, then maybe we will trust. But I was exactly the same. It used to be once the light turns on or the street lights turn on, come back inside. We used to take we lived in a court and we used to take our dinner outside and eat it with all the children. And then it was just like, you know, when the lights come back on, you got to come back inside, guys. But now as a parent, you've got to ask yourself, would you actually allow your children to do that?
I love that. When the street lights come back on. And you know, it's been a good holiday when you say to your child, when was the last time you showered?
Exactly right. And you look at the bottom of your feet. I remember my mum used to put some water in the bath and just go, just wash the dirt off before you hop into bed.
Wash your feet.
And now, yeah, exactly right. Just don't get my sheets dirty. But I think, you know, we can reminisce with children with that, but also they haven't been exposed to that. So it's going to take them a little while to realise that that's just as fun. If I told my kids that now, they'd be like, mum, you're so old.
Yeah, well,
so,
that's disgusting. Why don't you shower?
Exactly. Whereas they're not used to it. So we've got to reintroduce that kind of living to them, I guess.
There's some great text. School holidays were Lego, bikes, homemade water slides, visits to the beach. That's in the 80s and the 90s. It was just golden. But others that say things like, well, they can still play computer games. They can still use modern things. It's not like they're going to be living in the 80s and running along creeks and flying kites. It's just wishful thinking from those older folk. And I do wonder how much of it is just nostalgia. And we were bored too. And, you know, it's not like 100%. They were these perfect school holidays that we look back on now.
Exactly right. And, you know, I'm sure we had the same arguments that we're having with our own kids these days, but just different. And it's definitely not saying get rid of screens altogether. That's definitely not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to get a balance and we're trying to save the kids from that constant just looking through reels and being exposed to potential things that are unsafe for them. So as I say to my kids, go out and touch some grass, get some balance. Then let's sit down and, you know, play, Mario Kart or something together that's fun that I'm engaged in, or sit down and watch a family movie that we can share and enjoy. But definitely we would be in denial if we think that we're going to get rid of it completely, because that's just not the way of the world. We're not living in that era anymore. So we've got to move with it a bit.
There's nothing better than that first night of school holidays where it feels like you have eternity. You have forever ahead of you of holidays. And when you wake up on the first day and for a moment you still think you've got to go to school, and then you remember you've got like 8 weeks off, and it's just the best feeling in the world. Elise, thank you. I wish you a happy holidays.
Amazing. Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
See ya. Dr. Elise Waghorn, lecturer in early childhood education at RMIT. Will our kids ever have the sort of summer holidays that we have? Is it just wishful thinking? This, it says, I think some kids will feel relieved that they're now given permission to be free of that device. However, my concern is not so much about children, but adults who are equally just as addicted and who are meant to be the role models. So will summer holidays look any different for young people, for your kids, for your grandkids, now that they won't have social media? Maybe they'll have other sites that they'll use. Maybe computer games will be a big part of it. And are we just wishful thinking that they will have the sort of summer holidays that we had?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
And speaking of school holidays, we all have really good intentions, don't we, of trying to read more. If you're anything like me, you've got a big pile of books, possibly covered in dust next to your bed that you're like, okay, I'm going to read those these holidays. So when you read, do you try and keep the book pristine, or do you like crack the spine? Do you make notes? Do you write in margins? Do you fold in the edges? Or maybe you take it a step further and you're a part of the book tabbing community. So there is a huge trend. I think it started on TikTok, where everything else starts, speaking of social media, but it's about annotating your books. So maybe there is someone in your house that's done this. Maybe you've noticed it on public transport. And this is a series of coloured tabs that are marking pages, marking sections, and marking emotions of the books that people are reading. Sometimes there's like so many tabs that you can barely see the pages. Do you do this? Anna Berkey is the head of Australia Reads. And I've got a lot of young people in my life and they all annotate. There are so many tabs within these books. It's ridiculous. Like, we're running out of tabs. And I'm like, do you actually go back and read them and mark them? But there's something wonderful about, I think, the connection that they have to this section. Maybe it helps them pay attention more to the bit. But is this a new trend, or is it just a trend but done in a different way?
I think it's a bit more of a visible trend at the moment, especially when you can buy beautiful stationery and have different coloured tabs and make it look like a work of art. But I think that point you just made about it helps us remember. If you underline something, if you scribble a note, I think about it when I'm in work meetings and I scribble notes. I don't go back and look at them, but they help me retain the knowledge. So I think it can really be like that with books. You've got the pink coloured tab and I can remember what's on page 27. And, oh yeah, that was a really important point. So it's just lovely to see people engaging with that kind of concentration around reading and really wanting to talk about and think about the themes that are in the book.
It's interesting, isn't it, that you mention stationery, because there is another trend of, I don't know whether it's boys as well, but I know a lot of young girls, they're keeping office works alive just quietly. The stationery trend is real and it can be expensive, but I think it's the two things combined, isn't it?
And it's that sense of the physical object. So although audiobooks are really kind of stratospherically growing in interest and people love ebooks to read on the go, print books are still absolutely what the vast majority of people prefer to read. And I think when you're annotating a book and you're adding in the stickers, I've got to say that my skin crawled a little bit when you talked about cracking the spine. I can't quite go that far.
Too far.
But it really does give that sense of, this is my object and I can really engage with it. And that sense of the book as a beautiful object as well is something we're really seeing a lot more interest in.
Did you ever write in the margins, or have you ever found a book at a secondhand shop or an op shop or even borrowed from a library where there are someone else's notes and you read them and it feels a bit pervy or something? You know? Where you're like, oh my goodness, this is really private. This is somebody else's thoughts on a page. I wonder how common that is now.
I certainly love it when you open a book and it's someone else, you know, there's the little dedication in the front, or, you know, this was a prize that was given to someone in 1968. I love that sense of connection to, I'm not the first person to have read this book. I'm not the first person to have got something out of this. And that it, I think it gives that real sense of connection to readers. It depends what they've written in the margins, I guess, Rochelle.
Absolutely.
Something could be a bit more, yeah.
And depending on the book. Because this is annotating is big kind of in the romance and the teen romance world, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because it allows people to kind of really draw attention to lines and words that have been really powerful for them and to share with others. So if you've got a bit of a complex feeling or you're not sure how to articulate something you're feeling, you find those words in a book that they resonate so strongly for you. You want to share them with others. So that sense of annotating them, keeping them for the future, sharing them with online communities, that's where that kind of that's coming from. That's really showing the kind of emotional power that books have.
Anna Berkey is with you, head of Australia Reads. Whether you're an annotator or you're part of the book tabbing community, or do you try and keep your books pristine? 1-300-222-774. Anna, we're also talking about how different our kids' summer holidays are versus ours. Let's have a chat to Naomi, who's in Leechville. Hi, Naomi.
Why, good morning.
What was your school summer holidays like?
It was wild. It was fun. Sometimes we dream about it. We were in Bunbartha, north of Shepparton in Victoria. And in the school summer holidays, being primary and secondary, we all mixed. We had a group of anywhere from 12 to 15 kids from three homes, mine being one of them, a span of about 5 or 6 miles. But we had the main channel that near our house, and we would swim nearly all day. We would ride our ponies. When our ponies were in the water, they were fantastic. The boys would hang on to the tails and we'd tow them through the water. The ponies would stand in the water and would dive off their backs. And when we got sick of playing with the ponies and played whatever in the water, they would just plonk themselves down on the edge of the channel in the water and eat till we wanted them.
Wow. Did you have summer friends, Naomi, so they were just friends over summer?
No. In a little small place like that, they were friends altogether.
Oh, they were friends all year round. Oh, and yes. I just wonder how many kids are having childhood summers like that now, Naomi.
I know, I don't know. The parents used to stock up on all sorts of food, like we didn't have junk food, sandwiches and fruit, because we'd just go from house to house. We didn't get in big trouble. We aged from 5 years, who got towed on his bike by a horse's tail because he got tired, to about 14. We put a big sign up the end of either of the main country road we'd be on. It would say, beware, kids, dogs, horses, bikes.
Isn't that funny? And in regional sort of summers in regional and rural areas are so different. I was talking, Anna, thank you, Naomi. Have a wonderful Christmas. I was talking, Naomi, to Anna, to my mother-in-law and some of her relatives, and they grew up in regional Victoria, in central Victoria. Very large families, you know, 10, 12 kids type thing, not a lot of money. And what they were reminiscing about over summer holidays was that my mother-in-law would bring fresh white bread and bananas, and they would make banana sandwiches. And it was the highlight, because when you had the two families together, you had something like 19 kids just with like two families. So the days of junk food or fish and chips, forget about it. It was just too expensive. And they loved these fresh white bread and banana sandwiches. And that's what their school holidays, that's what they looked forward to.
Sounds like a bit of a ritual, like every year this is something we can remember. And I bet that sense of smell is probably still evocative. If they make a banana sandwich today, it probably takes them right back there.
I wonder if it tastes as good, you know, when someone else makes it for you, it tastes better. What were your summer holidays like, Anna? Were you just a bookworm the whole time?
I've got to confess, I pretty much was a bookworm the whole time. Also, quite frankly, I grew up in Scotland, which does not have the same summer holiday experience.
No, a little different.
That we have here in Australia. So I just really enjoy summer as the way the time everybody switches off in this country. It's a wonderful thing. But yeah, definitely for me, it was about getting time, having the time in my schedule to just sit and read a book for 2 hours as a young person, not having to do homework. That in itself felt like a luxury over that.
And in all seriousness, I mean, we're sort of talking about our summer holidays and whether or not our kids now, if they are disconnecting from social media, whether they'll look anything like what our summer holidays looked like. But at Australia Reads, you are doing a lot of work to help people adjust, to come up with ideas. And for some kids and for some parents, it might be stressful all of a sudden to try and detox, to not get on socials and to not spend as much time on our phones and our devices.
Yeah, I think there's been, the last kind of 10 years of enormous social media and AI companies have done their best to put all their effort into getting us addicted, really, into having this social media and these devices be an integral part of our lives. So the fact that we're starting to come out of that process and our young people are kind of the first ones having to go through some of this process, we definitely have to be really mindful of the fact that it's not so easy as just saying to them, here's a great book. We've gone and talked to teens about what help do they think they need in order to get back into books. And something that's come through really strongly is that they want to talk about books with us as adults. They want to talk about the books they love and the books they have chosen, and then have a conversation with us about what they found between the pages. So I think as long as they're able to have that sense of being in charge, of choosing what they want to read, whether it's a graphic novel, whether that's a fantasy book, whether that's a nonfiction book, and then for us to be able to talk to them about it, but also to share what we're reading, what we think of that. That's what our young people are saying, actually really helps motivate them.
And bringing it back to annotating and tabbing your books, what I love about this trend is for many young people, and I don't know, maybe older people as well, they're tabbing the books and then gifting the books to a friend to say, here, I've already highlighted the really good bits or the romantic bits or the so I love this, or I've highlighted the bits that I thought you would like. And I think even though some of us may be very precious about books and, you know, don't do this and don't do that and whatever the unwritten rules may be, if it's engaging people in books, if they're tabbing, if they're marking, if they're highlighting and then passing them on to other people, this can only be a good thing.
It's a wonderful thing because it really shows I've thought about you and the bits I think you would like. It's a really thoughtful activity to do, and it's a way of kind of encouraging bonding. Here's a bit I like. Here's a bit I think you'll like. You know, we're the same. We both feel this way. So what it's really supporting is having reading as a social bonding exercise. And I don't know about you, but there was definitely copies of, I remember Flowers in the Attic was certainly
passed around. Oh, yes. The nuns didn't let me read that. I took that to school. And Sister Judith, I remember her going, who is reading this book? And I was like, I am. And she confiscated it.
Oh, well, we had illicit copies going around with pages turned down, so which bits were most interesting. So I think that sense of everybody reading together and having that shared experience, even if not everybody improves. Wow.
I've forgotten about that book. Goodness me. You've just opened up the vault there, Anna. Anna, thank you. I wish you a Merry Christmas. Have a safe holiday.
A very Merry Christmas. Happy reading to you.
Anna Berkey, head of Australia Reads. I was an emergency teacher in class. I was so surprised that the other teacher had directed the students to use highlighters on important passages. They were marking too many pages for it to be useful. I said to the other teacher, these students can't do this. They need to be reselling their books. But Lisa says, I've done this with Jacinta Parsons' books. There are so many sentences and paragraphs that just resonated with me and spoke to me that I had to highlight and I had to annotate. And Mohammed says, I used to be a geography teacher and would ask and see so many parts of textbooks that made me and that were highlighted that it made me literally feel like I was glowing from all of the highlighting. So are you annotating? Do you have a young person in your life that is annotating? Book tabbing, it's a thing. Keep those calls coming through. Sue's in Ballarat. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
I'm presuming you don't like to annotate and tab.
No.
To leave books that, alone.
You need to look after. Don't throw it on the floor. Look after it. Don't even fold down the corner of a page in a book because that's damaging it.
See, with tabbing though, right, you can take the tabs off. And so I actually think you could remove them and the book's in good condition.
Yes, you have a point. But it's taking away that initial enjoyment that the person will have if someone has already put stuff in there. Like
writing in margins with grey lead, Sue, how do you feel about that?
Oh, look, I don't really approve of it, but having said that, I cook a lot and I have a lot of recipe books.
Yes.
And what I found over time was I thought I'll write the date that I made that recipe.
Oh, that's a good idea.
On that page. And I just, over the years I've done it, and some recipes will have like more than 20 dates on it. And I think, oh, that must be a good recipe. And that's what I'm imagining that people in the future, if someone else picks up that book, they might think, oh, well, that recipe's worth making.
I know, I'm the same. I've got cookbooks where there are certain recipes that I go to, and I know where the page is now because it's all crinkly and weird on the side because it's covered, you know, in oil and all sorts of things, and because it's dirty. And I think cookbooks should be dirty as well.
Yes.
Oh, good on you, Sue. Have a Merry Christmas. This, my mum used to read a book before gifting it, but she basically wrote comments in the margins as well. It was hilarious. Deb's in Mount Martha. Hi, Deb.
Oh, hi there. Yep.
Are you a part of the book tabbing community?
Only with my own books. I love book tabbing. I love annotating books, but I'm also a librarian, and when we find people annotating our library books, we're not so happy about it. So,
no.
Yeah, just a little reminder to annotate your own books and highlight to your heart's desire, but please refrain from doing that to your library book.
So that you mean like physically writing or highlighting, so little tabs that can be removed?
Yeah, little tabs that can be removed, that's perfectly fine. Go ahead and do that. But, don't scroll on the book and then return it because, we don't really appreciate that, and neither does the next borrower necessarily.
No.
It can be interesting to see what people have highlighted, but...
Oh, no, it says a lot about a personality too, where you're like, I wonder why they highlighted that bit.
Yes.
Do you find old notes or anything?
Sometimes we find all sorts of things. We've, found money in books that from time to time and often bookmarks. So, occasionally shopping receipts and all sorts of things that come up.
Shopping lists, love letters, you name it.
Yeah. Can be quite entertaining.
Good on you, Deb. Thank you. Nanette's in Wangaratta. Good morning.
Hello.
How do you feel about this movement?
Oh, no, don't do that. But I just wanted to tell you about travelling on the road. We live on the road and have done for 7 years. So when you finish a book, if you're in a caravan park, you normally leave it in the toilet.
Oh, you leave it in the loo?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah, so you're always swapping a book around.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing this for, Nanette?
We've been on the road just at the end of 7 years now.
Have you really?
Yes, we sold our house and everything in it and around it and got on the road in 2018.
Get
out! But we always sort of come back towards northeast Victoria for the summer.
Wow. Did you ever intend on it being this long?
I wanted to do this 20 years ago and then my kids were a bit small and then they've grown up and, yes, I did. I lost a couple of really close friends.
Yeah. That shocks you into doing stuff and not waiting, doesn't it?
Oh, well, could be dead tomorrow.
Wow. And has it been everything you thought it would be?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
And so where are you heading to next?
I've got to have a hip replacement next year, so won't be going too far.
Wherever the wind takes you. Oh, I love it, Nanette. Thank you. Drive safe. Yvonne's in Bairnsdale. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm loving the ideas of what is allowed and what isn't.
Well, you'll hate this one.
Yeah.
we're on a family holiday and my husband had just picked up a Vince Flynn book from the op shop to read and was telling us how good it was. So we decided, the four of us, that we all wanted to read it too. So we gradually tore it into four bits so that we'd all have a bit to read and then sort of pass it around to the next person. So this poor book was totally destroyed. But we had this shared experience, which was so exciting. And we talk about the bits that we'd just read and try and keep it, the spoiler alerts to a minimum. And it was fantastic.
And you all had a section each. I once knew someone that was giving a dictionary to someone as a gift and highlighted certain words under the dictionary. And I wonder whether they ever found those words. Some of them weren't the nicest words, just quietly. Maria's in Kingsville. Hi, Maria.
I remember my summer holidays as being a bit different from others. We'd come home from boarding school and have to help Dad with the harvest. And then we would have a joyous Christmas with extended family. but then we would all go down to the beach. Mum would sit under an umbrella. She wouldn't cover us up. I got blisters.
Oh.
But I still enjoy my holidays. Oh. But I remember horrific blisters and spending time in the house, getting, you know, having cold tea put on them, etc.
Oh, so yes, absolutely.
My summer holidays were a bit of a mixture for me.
Yeah, and you've reminded me too, my cousins used to have to do hay baling. Like, there was always summer parts of it were really fun, and then they'd be like, nope, it's time for you to go off now and, you know, do all the hay baling that needed to be done. And it was such hard work, and it was so hot, and they'd be out there for hours.
Well, that's right. I'm talking about 70 years ago, because I'm 86, and Dad was had a sheaf maker, and we had to, apart from towing the binder, we also had to stook them. So, you know, it was really quite heavy work.
But, yeah.
And in the heat, because I remember summers as being very, very hot.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, Maria, I wish you a Merry Christmas. Thank you. Keep these calls coming in on how you remember your summer holidays, and will they ever look like that again for our kids? This will be the first, I guess, detox, social media detox for many of us these summer holidays. So will they look any different?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So there's a lot of talk around the impact that Taylor Swift has, not on music, but on the economy, on all sorts of parts of our lives. But is she also having an impact on the crew, so the people behind the scenes of the music festivals and the music business? So apparently she, I think, gave something like $300 million in bonuses to her lighting, to her sound technicians, to her caterers, to her dancers, to her security guards. She apparently gave bonuses to her production truck drivers. And these gestures, many say, sent a clear message that the work and the hard labour behind the scenes of the music industry, of the tours, not only matter, but it's vital. And without them, the Taylor Swifts or the AC/DCs or the Oasis or the Amel and the Sniffers of the world, the show just simply doesn't go on. But do they get treated properly? Are they being paid properly? And do we have enough of these people behind the scenes to keep our music industry alive? Andrew McKinnon is one of the board members from Crew Care. Andrew, it's kind of big bucks that Taylor Swift, I don't know if it's true or not, but these are some of the figures that are being thrown around of what she gave to those behind the scenes. If nothing else, it shines a light on the amount of work and labour that is needed to get music up and running, to keep these festivals up and running.
Yes, look, it really does. And I believe there was a lot of generosity there from the artist to her touring crew on there, and good on her for that. And it's an amazing thing. And it's a rarity in this industry for people to get bonuses such as that. But in terms of the amount of volume of work that's hitting the Australian shores at the moment, you know, we've just gone through, so apart from being at Crew Care, also work for an outdoor staging company, and we've been delivering stages all around the country for Spilt Milk and Good Things. We also get involved in some stadium work as well with Kendrick Lamar and Diljit. And then when you look at the last 8 weeks of period, we've had Spilt Milk in half a dozen cities, Good Things, all of the associated sideshows with those festivals, then Oasis, Metallica, Kendrick Lamar, Diljit, you know, Lady Gaga, AC/DC, all on top of each other in all these stadiums. And there's multiple shows in multiple venues in the one city at the same time. And it is very, very challenging for suppliers and workers to meet that demand. And, you know, there's a lot of pathway. There's a pathway program that Crew Care have been doing, and we're seeking further funding for that for other states around. So if any government people listening that want to engage with us in that, would be more than happy to have that conversation. But we need more pathways in there to support jobs in the industry.
Yeah, and at least to coordinate it so that it's not feast or famine as well. I mean, there were so many issues for the music industry during COVID and during the pandemic and during lockdowns, you name it. And there was a mass exodus almost of crew from behind the scenes in the music industry. So those with decades of experience, did many of them come back in terms of just having the level of expertise, having enough people coming through, having enough mentors? What's the state of the amount of people that you've got behind the scenes?
Yeah, so I think we did lose a lot of people. The industry lost a lot of people during that COVID period. I'd say a fair few of them have come back.
Oh, that's good.
And I think the problem that the industry faces at the moment, if we just take a step back and have a look at the frequency events and how they all come in gluts on top of each other, there's so many different things driving that, from the fact that tours get scheduled 2 years out, for example, right, at a, you know, music agent's office somewhere overseas. So, and there's no coordination at that level. So, you know, Lady Gaga and Kendrick Lamar and AC/DC's people aren't talking to each other to find out whether they're going to end up in Melbourne on the same day, right? So, and then there's also another filter that goes through, a venue availability. So particularly in Australia, with the stadium availability, we're kind of jammed in between the end of football season and the start of cricket season in there as well. So there's kind of no real purpose-built outdoor venues in there, or like Europe, where they just get used for football during a season and then they just get used for concerts. We use ours all the way around. So it does put this feast or famine, you know, factor onto it. And probably one of the issues is sustaining all of the people that come into the industry to fill the gaps in summer during the winter period.
And so what happens in winter? I mean, I guess this is the thing too. So the Lady Gagas of the world, are they, I'm presuming they tour with their crew, that they wouldn't be using local crew? I mean, are local people being used for big international gigs, or do you sort of need to find yourself a band to go on tour with?
No, so the way the industry works is all of those acts, you know, your Lady Gaga's and AC/DC's and all that sort of stuff, to varying degrees will hire a lot of local staging and a lot of local production and a lot of flooring and all of the rest of the stuff they get locally. So there's very few of them that bring absolutely everything with them. So Taylor Swift was probably one of the exceptions to that rule, where they brought out literally everything down to the last nut and bolt that they use. And really what we provided as the Australian music industry for them was venues and venue support and labour and all that sort of stuff, right? So then there's a lot of the arena shows that come in here and hire kind of pretty much everything off us. So there's always some degree of touring technicians and stuff with all the tours that come through. But what it comes down to in the lower periods in there, there's a lot of people that will go on to film industry.
And juggle between the two, between, say, film and TV. I know Andrew McKinnon is with you, part of the crew. He's a board member for Crew Care. We're talking about what happens behind the scenes within our music festivals, and it feels like there is a great energy amongst live music at the moment, Andrew, and hopefully that continues to build. But I know there's also a lot of work that gets done into the mental health of crew members and really overlooking the emotional strains, being away from your family members, being on tour all the time, not being recognised. Is that progressing? And, you know, and as a result, are people staying in the industry longer because their mental health is being nurtured and looked after?
Yeah, it's definitely improving. So a lot of the services that Support Act provide, and Crew Care do a bit of fundraising to help support Support Acts programs in there, of well-being in there. And I think a lot of them are reactive programs, so they're for people in crisis. What we're starting to do through our welfare committee and working with Support Act is providing a lot of proactive services as well. So into wellbeing and how to manage your own mental health, how to identify other people in the industry through the mental health first aid courses that we do. So anyone in the industry that's done the training can become a first responder. So you can be there at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, which is like the really lonely part of the day,
yeah.
Right? You know, you can do, you know, 16, 17-hour days sometimes on a production, and it's okay when everyone is there during the day, but as the numbers thin out and you're the rigger or the, you know, the video technician or the lighting person there, and then all of a sudden it's 1:30 in the morning and you're facing
everyone's
loading
gone.
A truck. Everyone's gone and it gets lonely. And, you know, and likewise with all of the really forgotten people about the industry of the event cleaners, the people that do the flooring, the barrier and all that sort of stuff, they're the ones that are working from, they'll turn up to work at 1 o'clock in the morning and work till 8 o'clock in the morning by themselves. So, yeah, there's a lot of services that are now are getting a lot more proactive in there, and I think that that's helping a lot.
Yeah,
we're still a long way to go because it's
well, and as punters as well, we just need to maybe pay attention, not just to the artists, but look around to the people that are making that gig, that event possible as well, and you know, be thankful, maybe say g'day or smile and nod or say thank you or whatever it is. And people can always reach out if they're in the industry, they can always reach out to Crew Care, they can always reach out to Support Act as well. Andrew McKinnon, we've been talking about idyllic summer holidays and whether or not now that many of our kids may have a digital detox these summer holidays. Did you have, you know, were you in bands, were you running around the streets, what were you doing in your summer holidays as a kid?
A lot of both of those things. I grew up in Ferntree Gully, and we used to ride our bikes. We used to get the train up to Belgrave and ride over the top of Mount Dandenong and come back. It was listening to your show before. It was the same as everyone else's stories in the 80s. Our parents had no idea where we were. we didn't have water bottles, sunscreens. We didn't even have helmets, right?
Yes.
But somehow we all got through it.
Oh.
And you know, the other thing with music, you know, we had bands then and we had rehearsal studios and we'd go and jam for the day. There was a lot of local gigs back there. And I don't know if those underage gigs still exist as much anymore.
And are people making summer bands? Like who's making a band in the garage this summer?
Yeah. Yeah. We used to all get together, me and my mates, and, you know, tune out some reasonably awful music between us and have a lot of fun, and we'd go to local gigs and, you know, we'd go to, you know, the roller skating rink and Blue Light Discos and
all that sort of stuff.
So, you know, I'm just a bit out of touch and I don't know if any of those events...
Oh, if someone's joining a band this summer, I want to hear about it. Andrew, thank you. Andrew McKinnon from Crew Care. Of course, you can reach out to Crew Care. You can reach out to Support Act as well.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
We've been talking about annotating books, which means putting little tabs in your books on the pages that you love, in particular maybe the romantic pages as well. So are you a part of the book tabbing community? This annotation thing is sounding like people doing an assignment. I don't want annotations. I want that book to be for me without somebody else's comments. And others saying, oh, I don't want my books pre-read or pre-approved or marked by anyone, or make notes and tabs on my own text and my own reference and from no one else. Thank you so much. That's from Joan. Well, how are you going with your Christmas shopping? Mine's not doing great. I don't want to think about it. But anyhow, it will get done. We know that. But for many of us, there'll be last-minute gifts. We'll be thinking about friends or family members or neighbours or school friends. And when you're running up and down the aisles of toy shops, do we need to consider, you know, gender and whether or not things are pink and blue and whether or not we are going to offend somebody? And are gifts still really gendered? Are toys still really gendered? How far have we progressed? Dr. Tori Algetti, Aletti, is a senior lecturer in marketing at RMIT. Torgia, we've been talking a lot over the years about, I remember hearing from someone, and I've done it ever since, somebody moving a T-shirt from a boys' section that had the word NASA on it and putting it in the girls' section so that girls could too strive to be astronauts and to work in space. Are we still at the point where we're physically having to move T-shirts from boys' sections to girls' sections or vice versa?
That's a good question. Thanks. No, I don't think we necessarily are still there. And I do think that many retailers are quite aware of this, and they are making moves to make their retail spaces more inclusive. But you know, old stereotypes still exist, and the way toys are made, marketed, are still very much divided.
Wow. So is it still old school pink and blue? I mean, is that still happening?
It is still happening to a very large extent. I suppose it's an easy way for marketers to segment the market. But you know, there are perhaps better and more effective ways of doing that.
So in terms of there being more gender-neutral toys, a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not going to just buy wooden toys or they're all boring. Or when we say gender-neutral, what does that mean now? Is it just about colour?
No, it's not. It's not just about colour. So the research that we've done around this was a review paper based on more than 200 studies published on topics of gender and marketing and children, and we see that marketers are using what we in marketing refer to as the marketing mix, or the four P's of marketing. So our products are designed, advertising, where they are sold, so the distribution of it, and also the prices. And we found loads of examples in literature of how marketers are using all of these mechanisms in order to divide the market up in things that are for girls and things that are for boys.
And it happens on so many levels beyond toys. I mean, razors, for example, are one perfect example where, for whatever reason, the pink razors are three times more expensive.
Yeah, that's what we refer to as the pink tax. So you divide it up, the market up for boys and girls, and then you typically charge more for the girls' version.
I'm just surprised it's still happening. I feel like it would be, you know, we've progressed in so many areas that the pink tax is still a real issue. Are you seeing disruptors come in to that market a little bit, Torgia?
Yes, there are a number of sort of parent activist organizations that are in this space and that are arguing for more gender neutral toys. And what we are seeing happening to some extent, but perhaps not enough, is to in all aspects of how toys are marketed, that you are clear that these are not just for one gender, so that you have advertising that depicts children of both genders playing with the toy, for example, so that it's not telling the consumer that if you are this gender, then you shouldn't have this toy, and if you are this gender, you should have the other toy, so that it's more open and so that parents and children can decide what they wish to play with.
Well, I will never forget, and it was literally years ago, maybe 10 years ago, where a caller spoke to me about moving that T-shirt. And I think I've been moving T-shirts ever since, you know, from boys section into girls section and girls section into boys section, or even with film premieres, if you look at things like Frozen or Wicked, they're always in the girls section. And who's to say that that young boy doesn't want to dress up as Elsa or, you know, isn't a big fan of Wicked as well. So, you know, it's not just toys, there's movie promotions and everything as well. Torgeir, thank you.
My pleasure.
Dr. Torgeir Aletti is a senior lecturer in marketing at RMIT. I'm off now for Christmas break. Kirsten Diprose will be filling in for you next week. A huge thank you to my team, to Amber, to Ross, to John, and to Ollie. Have a safe and wonderful Christmas. I'll speak to you next year.